Ever feel like you're just drowning in information, but still trying to find that one thing that really helps you grasp a topic? We all want to get a handle on things quickly,
Yeah, it
right?
can feel like overload sometimes.
Definitely. Well, today we're doing a deep dive into something called applied research. The idea, basically, is using research in a really practical way to solve real-world problems.
Exactly. And we've got some great material to unpack here, looking at a step-by-step guide, drawing on Dr. Benny Claxton's work.
Okay.
So our mission for this deep dive is pretty clear. Figure out what applied research actually is, why it's important, and, the basic steps involved.
All right, applied research. It sounds like it's less about theory and more about, well, action, like getting stuff done based on research.
That's a good way to put it. It really stems from wanting to see actual improvement. We're talking practical solutions for issues in schools, businesses, healthcare, community groups, you name it.
So, real places, real problems.
Real problems, yeah. It's focused on making things better on the ground.
So the outcome isn't just like a paper that gets filed away.
Hopefully not. The typical deliverable is often an applied research manuscript. Could be a dissertation, maybe a capstone project, or even an internal report for an organization.
Okay.
But the key is, it details a specific problem and uses actual data to suggest ways to fix it or improve things. It looks at causes, what's been tried, and offers a, well, an evidence-based path forward.
And the sources mention using both qualitative and quantitative data. That sounds comprehensive. They use the term multi-method
Right,
design.
multi-method, that's a key concept here. Applied research embraces using different kinds of data because they tell you different things.
How so?
Well, qualitative data, think interviews, observations, gives you that rich, deep understanding. The why behind an issue, people's experiences.
What's the context?
Exactly. And then quantitative data, surveys, stats, numbers, shows you the scale of the problem, the how much or how often.
Ah, I see.
So multi-method just means deliberately using various ways to collect and analyze both types of data to get a more complete picture.
So it's not like you have to pick one lane, qualitative or quantitative.
No, not at all. Actually, there's a growing agreement, and the sources we looked at mention this, that combining them gives you much richer insights. You get more flexibility, too.
Flexibility, how?
Well, you can adapt your approach as you learn more. Say you're looking at, I don't know, a new program that isn't quite working. Numbers might show low scores.
Quantitative.
Right. But talking to people, the qualitative side might reveal confusion about the instructions or maybe not enough training. That gives you a much clearer idea of what needs fixing.
That makes sense. You get the numbers and the story behind them.
Precisely. But like any research, it needs to be examined. Findings aren't just accepted without question.
Of course. Now, something else that struck me was the focus on a specific place or context, not necessarily aiming for findings that apply everywhere. Why that local focus?
That's actually one of its strengths. Because problems are often very context specific, right? A solution that works wonders in one school district might not work in another because of different resources, student populations, or even local policies.
Right.
So applied research aims to create tailored solutions. If a specific company has a customer service issue, the research done there considers its customers, its culture, the recommendations are practical for them.
So maximum impact locally, even if it's not a universal law.
Exactly. It's about targeted, effective solutions for the stakeholders involved.
Got it. Okay, so why would someone actually do this kind of research? What's the main driver?
Fundamentally, it's about making things better, seeing a problem that needs fixing, or maybe a practice that could be improved, and then using research systematically to figure out how.
So wanting causative change.
Yes. The guide mentions understanding behavior for better outcomes, or getting really specific about a problem to, say, boost achievement or benefit the people involved, the stakeholders. It's about using evidence to find solutions.
The guide frames this around central research questions, one for solving a problem, one for improving a practice. What's the real difference there? Is it just semantics?
Not quite. It's a useful distinction. Solving a problem usually means tackling something negative, falling profits, rising complaints, that sort of thing. The research digs into the cause and how to stop it.
Okay, fixing what's broken.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Improving a practice is more about taking something that's maybe okay or even good and making it better, more efficient, more effective, optimizing.
Like tweaking something that already works.
Exactly. Going from good to great, perhaps.
And those central questions have sub-questions too, right? Like for problems, what's the cause? What's been tried? What's your solution?
Yes, and for improving practice. Why improve it? what else is being considered, and what's your specific improvement idea.
That seems like a really structured way to keep the research focused.
It absolutely is. It provides a clear pathway, keeps you on track towards that specific goal, whether it's fixing or enhancing.
Okay, let's walk through the 9 steps the guide lays out. Step 1, find a site. Sounds simple enough, but I guess there's more to it.
Finding the right site is, well, foundational.
Yeah.
It's the actual place, the school, the business, the clinic, where the issue exists.
Right.
And the crucial part here, emphasized in the guide, is getting formal permission. A letter from leadership, the gatekeeper.
The gatekeeper.
Yeah, the person in charge who could say, yes, you can do your research here. Without that official okay, you're basically stop before you start.
Mm.
Like meeting the principal's permission for a school study.
Makes sense. You need access. So step 2 is define the problem. This sounds like where you really narrow things down.
Absolutely. And it's not usually done in isolation. It involves talking with those gatekeepers, but also others who are affected, the stakeholders.
Okay. Who are stakeholders exactly?
The guide defines them pretty clearly. Gatekeepers are the authority figures granting access.
Mm-hmm.
Stakeholders are, well, anyone involved or impacted by the issue. Or the research employees, students, customers, patients, community members.
Got it.
So through discussions with these groups, you refine the issue. You might start broad, like low morale, but you need to get specific, like addressing factors contributing to low morale among the nursing staff on the night shift.
Ah, much more focused. Makes the research manageable.
Exactly. Then step 3 is consider feasibility, the reality check.
Right. Can this actually be done? What goes into that check?
Several key things. Time is a big one. Do you realistically have enough? Think about school breaks, holidays, project deadlines.
Okay, time. What else?
Money. Research isn't always free. Are there costs for materials, travel, maybe software? Can you cover them?
Resources, yeah.
Then there's accessibility. Can you actually get to the site easily? And crucially, can you access the people you need, the participants?
Participants. That involves ethics, too, I imagine.
Definitely. Getting ethical approval,
yeah.
Ensuring confidentiality, informed consent. Plus, just thinking about how many participants you need and if you can realistically recruit them.
Okay. Time, money, access, participants. Anything else?
One more big one. Your own expertise. Do you have the skills needed? Do you understand the context? Any technical jargon? If you're researching complex medical procedures, you need some understanding, right?
You can't just walk in cold. So if any of those feasibility checks flash red, you might need to rethink.
It would be wise, yes. Better to adjust early on.
Okay. Steps 4 and 5 are about the proposal, writing it, and presenting it. This is the formal plan.
Exactly. The research proposal is the blueprint. It details the problem, your questions, your methods, how you'll collect and analyze data, your timeline, ethical considerations. Often, it's like the first few chapters of the final manuscript.
And presenting it.
That's about getting the formal sign-off from your advisor or committee, maybe an institutional review board or IRB for ethics, and confirming ongoing support from the gatekeeper at your site. It's the green light.
Gotcha. Green light secured, then step 6. Consider logistics, the practical stuff.
Yep, the nuts and bolts. This is where you figure out the how, when, where, and from whom of data collection.
Like scheduling interviews?
Exactly. Where will they happen? How will you record them? If you're doing surveys, how will they be distributed and collected? Do you need specific supplies or equipment? It's all the coordination to make it happen smoothly.
Seems like a lot of planning goes into that.
It does. Good logistical planning prevents headaches later.
Then step 7 is collect data, basically. Execute the plan.
Right. You follow the procedures outlined in your approved proposal. If anything needs to change significantly, you usually need to get approval for that too.
Okay. And after collection comes analysis, leading to step 8. Write the final applied research manuscript, pulling it all together.
Correct. You take your analysis, your findings, and write the full report. It includes the earlier sections of the proposal, but adds the results, discussion, and crucially, those evidence-based recommendations.
The so what part.
Exactly. What does this all mean, and what should be done about it?
And finally, step 9. Present the final applied research manuscript, the big reveal.
Kind of, yeah. It's often a final meeting or defense with your advisor or committee. You present your key findings and your recommendations, explaining how your research supports them. It's the culmination.
Wow, okay. 9 steps. The guide notes, they can be cyclical and overlap, which feels realistic. Research rarely goes in a perfectly straight line.
Very true. You often revisit earlier steps as you learn more.
Looking back at those 9 steps, is there one that feels most critical? Like, if you don't get this step right, the whole thing is shaky?
That's a tough question because they're all important. But if I had to pick one, I might lean towards step two, defining the problem clearly.
Really? Why that one?
Well, if you don't have a sharply defined, well-understood problem from the start, everything that follows can be slightly off target. Your questions, your methods, your analysis. It all stems from that initial problem definition. Get that wrong or too vague, and the impact of your recommendations might be limited.
That makes a lot of sense. A fuzzy target is hard to hit. What about common pitfalls? Are there typical challenges people run into at these different stages?
Oh, definitely. At step one, finding a site and getting that gatekeeper permission isn't always easy. Politics, bureaucracy, sometimes people are just wary.
I can see that.
Step two, defining the problem, getting stakeholders with different views to agree on one specific definition can take serious facilitation skills.
Right. Multiple perspectives.
Feasibility. Step three, people often underestimate the time involved or run into unexpected costs. Step four, proposal writing, just making it clear, concise, and convincing takes practice.
And logistics. Step six.
Logistics can get messy. Scheduling conflicts, technology failures, spaces being unavailable. Step seven, data collection, maybe lower response rates than hoped for, or difficulty recruiting specific participants.
Seems like Murphy's Law applies to research, too.
It sometimes feels that way. Step eight, analysis can be complex. And step nine, presenting effectively, especially complex findings and actionable recommendations, is a skill in itself. Being aware helps you prepare, though.
Absolutely. Forewarned is forearmed. So, just to wrap our heads around the core idea again, applied research is this structured, methodical way to tackle real-world issues in specific settings.
Yes, using evidence.
Using evidence, right, to come up with practical recommendations presented in a final manuscript or report.
You've got it. It's about generating knowledge for action, aimed at making a tangible difference for the people directly involved. And this kind of step-by-step process provides a really helpful roadmap.
It really does. This has been incredibly insightful, really clarifies what applied research is all about and how it works.
Glad it was helpful.
For everyone listening, maybe think about it. Is there a persistent issue or something you'd like to improve in your own workplace or community? Perhaps some of these applied research principles could offer a path forward.
Even just thinking about defining the problem and who the stakeholders are could be a useful first step.
Great point. Well, thanks again for walking us through this, and thank you for joining us for this deep dive. We hope it gives you a solid foundation.
Hope so, too.
We'll be back with more deep dives soon. Thanks for listening.